Again, my name is Bernard Owens. I'm here from Emory University, and I work with Project Adolfo in Atlanta. Project Adolfo is a black men's health initiative. And one of the things that we sought to do with Project Adolfo is tap into resources and interview black men, which presented in itself a challenge because we have been told that black men are mythical creatures with regard to participatory research, kind of like the Loch Ness Monster or the Tooth Fairy. And we know that that's not true. So I brought this quote from Ralph Ellison. "I am an invisible man. I'm a man of substance, of flesh and bone, fiber and liquids, and I might even be said to possess a mind. I am invisible, understand, simply because people refuse to see me." And this is important with regard to participatory research because it really takes not only people that look like the community that you're trying to reach, but people who have a sense of authenticity and can connect with others from a standpoint of being a human being. "Invisible Men No More, Black Male Empowerment Through Community-Based Sexual Health Research." Now, that's a big title, but basically, like I said, the goals of the project were to affect change. My name is Bernard Owens, and I have no relationships to disclose. And this is Project Adolfo, founded by Dr. David Melbranch, who is here with us today at Emory University. Adolfo is a Ghanaian boy's name, meaning one who loves or a courageous warrior. We thought that appropriate. Team Project Adolfo is funded by the National Institute for Nursing Research. Dr. Melbranch is the primary investigator. The study team is comprised of Lisa Boleg, Thurka, now I've been practicing this last name, so don't, Thurka San Gara Morphy, Yolanda Wimberly, Brandy Park, Alana Stone, who's also here with us today, myself, Bernard Owens, and Jeffrey Roman. So that's the team. A little bit of background information. Black men in the Southeast have the highest rates of HIV in the United States. And I don't know how many of you were aware of that. Previous studies have focused primarily on black MSM, or men who have sex with men, and HIV risk in major metropolitan areas. Little is known about how social contexts, meaning mental health and coping skills, influence sexual behavior among diverse samples of black men. Few qualitative studies until now have addressed social contexts of sexual behavior among predominantly heterosexual samples of black men. So really, this is groundbreaking in the sense that Dr. Melbranch's work is addressing a community that up until now hasn't had a voice, but the rates of infection in the black male community have steadily been on the increase, both for MSM and heterosexual black males. Talk a little bit about the recruitment methods and the processes, which is important when we talk about community-based participatory research. First of which is the advertising and community-based organizations, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention the importance of professional flexibility, and that's a term I kind of made up because out there in the field, we had community-based organizations that we had sought to partner with, and as you know, life happens, and so we focused on Valdosta, Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, and Columbus, Georgia, and for example, when we got to Valdosta, one of the teams that we had thought we had in place actually backed out on us. So what did that mean? That meant that we developed some sort of professional flexibility. My colleague Jeffrey Roman and I decided to put on our warrior boots, grab a bunch of flyers, and we hit the malls. We, you know, canvassed local campuses and barbershops and made it happen. And we conducted 90 interviews from May to, I believe it was, July. So it's quite a bit of interviews to complete. So again, with regard to the recruitment methods and processes, active on the ground recruitment, flexibility, internet recruitment, some through Craigslist, Adam for Adam, and Facebook. And also very important was the snowball sampling. What I mentioned earlier is in terms of connecting with these men on a human-to-human level, when men realize that as an African-American male who had their best interests at heart because I saw them in me and vice versa, it created a credibility and the snowball sampling increased if I interviewed two men and heard their stories and we developed a rapport. I felt they could trust me and what the project was about, and that then increased the participants that came later. So that's very important when establishing community-based research, participatory research. Because if they don't trust you, I think in the black community, some of you may have heard the term, game recognizes game. which basically means if you're not authentic, people can sense it. So that was a joke. It's okay to laugh at. So some general themes that emerged from the research include general health and experiences with healthcare practitioners, racism, police tensions, economic hardship, unemployment, incarceration's impact, and impact on masculinity, forced sexual encounters, spirituality, and fatherlessness, and the impact that that had on adulthood and the need for mentoring. And I'm going to go over the themes that glared at us as we were doing the interviews and popped up the most to our surprise. Obviously, economic hardship. Georgia has been hard hit, like the rest of the country, by the current economic situation that we're facing and are coming out of. So what happened from that, unemployment is cyclical. A lot of the brothers had had run-ins with the law, had been incarcerated previously. Then when they come out after serving their time, they go to seek employment, put down on the application that they have served their time and are back in society. Now they can't get a job. So it's just a cycle that goes around and around. That has an impact on masculinity. Another one of the things that struck me most from this research is how alike we are, not just as black men, but as men in general, but specifically for this study, as black men, men have a need to provide for their families. So if you can't work and you can't get a job because you've done something in the past that you've made restitution for, it affects how you feel and how you see yourself as a man. What I wasn't expecting was the high rate of forced sexual encounters among these men. And keep in mind, again, the research that we did was conducted with a wide swath of men, not just men who have sex with men, but we covered the gamut from 18 to 69, from different socioeconomic strata. So it was surprising to see so many of these men had had forced sexual encounters and had not dealt with that or hadn't spoken to anyone about it. I was taken aback in one of my first interviews when a gentleman said to me that his first sexual encounter was at the age of 8 years old. He had a burning sensation when he urinated, and it came out later that he had contracted gonorrhea from a female who had placed him on top of her and given him the infection. So he began crying, and it's one of the things you want to keep in mind when you connect with people. It's, you never know what you're going to get, but I think, again, if you're real, you get to really connect with people. So spiritual aspect, a lot of the men definitely identified with some sort of religious or spiritually based identity. And fatherlessness, the impact that not having a father in the household, a male figure, had on how they interact with their women. And ladies, this is important for you to know that a lot of us face intimacy issues, and some of that has to do with not having a male role model in the house growing up. So those are some of the themes that came up. Now, with regard to community participatory research and the processes, we had a community advisory board, which was essential in Atlanta, where Project Adolfo is based. What was essential about the community advisory board is that it was a diverse group of men and women. Now, when we talk again about community participatory research and me as a research interviewer, I also had to check myself coming into these interviews with these men, because I bring, like everyone, my own biases into these interviews. I had a young woman on our community advisory board who was an African-American woman say to me, after I told her about the gentleman who had the 8-year-old gonorrhea sexual encounter, "I don't want to hear about my black man crying." So that was disheartening in the sense that a lot of times I was picking up that black men specifically aren't afforded the luxury of just being human. We're supposed to be strong, and we're supposed to not talk about our problems. So that's a problem when you talk about how that manifests itself with regard to us taking care of ourselves mentally and physically and our health. Developing community partnerships. Like I said, this project was based in Atlanta. We conducted interviews in Valdosta, Georgia, and Columbus. With community partnerships, it was invaluable, the resources that we had. In Columbus in particular, we worked with the Columbus Wellness Center, Luella Rhodes. This woman primarily focuses on other women in her community, and she had stressed to us that she was unable to reach the black male population. But what she did and what this partnership with her did is she then called the women that she normally works with and recruited them to get their husbands to come in. So there's power in working with other people in the community, even if you may not think so. It's important to investigate those avenues. And what she brought with her was invaluable resources, as I mentioned. The wives got their husbands to come in. And she has credibility in the community. Also, support from community partners and the importance of reciprocity. Once this work was done, Columbus was finished first. Some of the interviews that we did with some of the men in Columbus contacted Luella, the female that I told you about. They now want us to come back and perform some sort of empowerment and intervention for the men in that area. And again, these are men who up until now have been deemed inaccessible. So I think that's pretty important. Go quickly through some of the pros and cons with regard to community participatory research. I'll start with the cons, because I like to end on a positive note. There are differing priorities, specifically with Columbus. One of the first interviews that I wanted to conduct coming into the work, I was a new research interviewer and I had a veteran with me. One of the first interviews we went to was a man in a wheelchair who was coughing profusely. Now I'm green and I'm new and I want to sit down with him with my recorder and get the interview, but he's coughing and I'm thinking, is he gonna be okay? And then I'm thinking, am I gonna be okay? I don't know what he's talking about. So the veteran that I was working with kind of pulled me aside and said, listen, let's call him an ambulance, let's reschedule the interview, and everything's gonna be okay. And I really needed that veteran there because as a newbie wanting to do well for the project, I probably would have sat there and let him kind of cough on me. I mean, I might have turned my head, but you know, I wanted to get the interview. So that's important. Some research myths that we had to debunk. I think if you were at the opening ceremonies yesterday, you heard about the Tuskegee experiment. Some of those things, some of that thinking is still ingrained in the community. So those are things we had to overcome. And that's why establishing credibility through Columbus was important. Lack of follow through. Again, one of the areas that we went to, we had something set up that fell through. What are you gonna do? You're gonna go out with flyers and make it happen. Emphasis on incentives, that can be seen as a con. The areas that we conducted some of these interviews with the economic climate, we were offering a $50 gift card that got them out the door initially, but it was our credibility with these men that had more participants show up. Going over to the pros, again, when you work with someone who's established in the community, you have access to the population. Advocacy and recruitment from her and her reputation, and establishing sustainable partnerships. As I mentioned, we're going to be going back to Columbus to do more work. Lessons learned. Community partnerships and trust lends to future work in the community. It's invaluable that we're going to go back. I can't explain to you how good it made me feel when Dr. Melbranch called me one day on my day off to let me know that the men that we spoke with in Columbus thought that we were psychologists because they had never talked about these issues before, and they wanted us to come back and do some sort of intervention. Up until working on this project with Dr. Melbranch, I was in the private sector. This has had a profound effect on me, where now I'm looking at work and obtaining my own master's in public health, because it addresses in me specifically a need to do something more than just earn a check. So it's pretty powerful. Again, black men seen as invisible, but I think we just need to put our glasses on. If you're looking to work with populations that you think are invisible, how hard are you working to access them? The importance of incentives in a recession, I talked about that. And the differences and similarities among black men, and I can't stress that enough. Like I said, 18 to 69, different socioeconomic backgrounds, but all of them as men, as black men, had some common themes, which is they wanted to provide for their families. They wanted to earn a decent wage. They wanted to be healthy. And finally, what I touched on earlier was the impact on the researchers. Like I said, for myself, personally and professionally, I'm not the same person that I was when I came into this work. So I'm grateful for that. And I think if Jeffrey were here, he'd say the same, my colleague that conducted the interviews, and Alana's here too. So if I can speak for you, are you still the same? Okay, you look the same. So in their own words, here are some of the things that the black men that we interviewed said. Well, I said it originally, this is really like therapy for me because it allowed me to see, you know, because when I talk, you know, I'm talking to myself too. So it allows me to see some things that I need to look at. So that's pretty valuable that introspection was taking place and he was willing to share that. Also, Dave said, I just hope what I contribute to this would be benefiting somebody to help somebody else that's going through something, to encourage them, uplift them, and to help them to keep the hope. I know if they keep God in their life, that they'd be okay. So what are the next steps with Project Adolfo? We've conducted the 90 interviews. Those interviews are being completed coding now. We've completed that. Now we begin the analysis. And what will we do with the analysis? We're going to disseminate our research findings to the communities that we interviewed in, Atlanta, Valdosta, and Columbus, and go back and try to do some interventions. Also, expanding partnerships and involvement with other community liaisons in other areas. And interventions for all black men, not just black men in the state of Georgia. And so some acknowledgments before I turn it back over to the moderator. I'd like to acknowledge all the men who allowed us to conduct interviews with them and for their authenticity. The Columbus Wellness Center, Luella Rhodes, the Boys Salon Barbershop, Shannon Buckner, the Valdosta Department of Public Health, January Smith and Brenda Mims, Dixon Transcription Services, and our Community Advisory Board. And that's going to do it for my presentation. And did anyone have any questions about the work that we've done? Thank you.